Welcome to Yours, Mine, and Ours. I'm your host, Gabrielle Cardona. I'm a relationship coach, and I like to teach people how to connect. I started out as a life coach because I wanted to teach people how to succeed, but I learned over the years helping people that success is truly based on connection. When you have a healthy self-esteem, you have a healthy relationship base. You can extend that to other people in the world, and you draw healthy people to you. When you have those good, solid relationships, you make the world a better place, not only because you encourage other people to be the best that they can be, but you're setting the example for them. I decided that I was going to make my specialty communication coaching because when you're healthy in the way that you think and you communicate, you can teach others how to not only avoid conflict, but eventually resolve the inevitable conflict that does come up in relationships. So today I'm coming back with this show because I took a few months off. I actually had some things that I was doing for my business. I'm going to be making some videos. I'm going to be holding some online classes. And yesterday I had an experience. I had an actual experience that went absolutely haywire with technology. And so when we're talking about relationships and we're talking about business, I've invited a very special guest. My guest today is Cam Harden. He's an operations manager at Harden Media. And I'm inviting him to talk to my listeners today because times are changing and a lot of people, because of COVID-19, are having to do everything on their computers that they used to do in person. There are some good things about that and some bad ones about that. So may I just say today, Cam Harden, thank you so much for joining us.
Gabrielle, thank you for having me. I think what you're doing is amazing. I look forward to the show.
And I really do trust and respect you. And I just wanted to say, before we get into any of the details about what you do and why I think my listeners deserve to hear this kind of information, I want to establish that I met you on a social website, but it was a business-related conversation that we were having. I have about 18,000 connections on this website and about 20,000 followers. I actually have more people following me than being connected to me, but it's tough for me to find people that I can trust in a professional capacity, but that I also respect enough to actually work with. Because when my listeners are hearing the things that I'm saying, they do trust that I know not only what I'm talking about, but that I would never promote something that is unethical or unprofessional or potentially harmful to them. So I really do appreciate what you do and that you are a good quality person, okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so now since, again, the world is not really full of trustworthy people, anybody can do anything on the internet. It doesn't even have to be real. And they can charge anything they want. I think, Cam, the actual phone call that I got the other day was about my social security number being stolen, and they needed to get into my bank account to get my number, to get my account number, and then my social security number just to make sure. I'm like, are you serious? Do you actually think I'm that stupid? Well, yeah, they kind of do. Okay, so because apparently anybody, right? But what I really want my listeners to know, and my LinkedIn connections and my Facebook followers, all the people who are looking at the work that I do, now that I'm in the process of making things online, everything now is completely online. Well, you know what? What if I have no idea what I'm doing? I used to have a classroom. I used to have 25 people every week who would come sit in these chairs and I could speak to them directly. I don't know what in the world I'm going to do now because we have to stay 6 feet apart. Well, but now you even have to have the shot if you want to be in the room. Well, you know what? You have to have the mask. Well, how would I, let's say I wanted to just make a video series of my classes, but I'm going online and I see all of these different prices for these different jobs and these different, what really is involved in making, let's just say an 18,000 5-minute video series of my MBTI, because I'm a Myers-Briggs certified practitioner. If I just wanted you to make me 18 5-minute videos that I could sell to people who can't come into the building anymore, what would that involve? And what would something like that even cost?
Let me begin by congratulating you. That certification is a difficult one to obtain, so that's awesome.
Thank you.
Yes. And that's actually, frankly, one of the best questions out there, because we're seeing a transition in life, as you've already stated. And really what that comes down to is the production, the directing, the editing, and really the reach, which is how you kind of already touched on this. How we met was on a social site for business-related social site, LinkedIn. And that's one of the platforms that are needed to deliver this message, and that goes into the production aspects of this. And so if you were looking to create series like that, where you would start is where kind of what the producer entails. You start with your budget. And when you talk about breaking down a series like that, you know, about a 5-minute, 18 minutes broken down into five videos, however you decide to time those, the sweet spot's typically between 60 to 90 seconds if you're looking to deliver on Instagram, Facebook, et cetera. If you're looking to deliver on YouTube, you want to keep it between 2 and 5 minutes. And so you kind of hit that on the sweet spot again. And so it starts with the production, which is the budget, which is essentially the person that, you know, initiates, coordinates, they're going to supervise and manage. They're essentially going to give the vision. They're the visionary. They're the Steve Jobs of the operation. And then the directing is pretty much all the creative responsibility. That's going to be the Steve Wozniak of the operation, the actual technical expertise and the delivery. Basically, the talent is the show, but the show is more important than the talent. The production team is in charge of making the talent happy, setting up, coordinating everything, and just ensuring a smoother process. And so the director is actually where the creative responsibility falls onto. And so if someone was looking to create a series like that, it would really fall into researching production and learning what goes into creating a series like that. It would really essentially entail having a camera and a microphone and the right lighting equipment, a second shooter, and the correct editing software. And so that's going to typically run your budget around $1,000 or so. And that's going to typically be about a week process to create per video.
That was going to be my next question. Why would it take that long?
It's the post-production that really kind of eats all the time and slots for all the time, because that's when you get into the finalization of the process and the rendering, which entails the delivery of the quality, which everyone wants to deliver exceptional quality, and that takes a lot of
Well, but here's the thing. When we're talking about, for example, I was working with a gentleman. He actually wanted me to write his book. Now, I'm a great writer, and he said, I have a great story, but I like the way you say the words, so I'm just going to verbally vomit on you for about a week and a half, and then you're going to take everything that I've given you and turn it into a beautiful buffet. And I'm like, okay, let's see what happens here. So when he did, I literally said, okay, so let's just start with the beginning of the substance. And he's like, well, what do you want to know? And I said, well, I don't know, because you're the one wanting me to write your life story. I don't know anything about your life. And he's like, well, you have to ask the right questions. And I said, okay, so we're going to have a problem here. And so I started asking some random questions just to get it going and trying to get in his mind. And then pull the information out of his mind and then put it onto the page and then present it in a way that not only was pleasing to him, but was accurate, because I'm sorry, honey, but this guy was delusional. Okay. And I'm like, but that's not what you said. And that's not what you did. He's like, but I want you to say it better. Okay. I've always told my children that when the writer and the director of a production, of a video production, whether it's a movie or a television show, when the writer and the director are the same person, that's great. But Cam, when you have the director who actually knows what goes into the production of an aesthetically pleasing work of art. And then you have the person who's coming to you, who's basically the writer, saying, but this is the information that I want. How do you know when to say, okay, I'm going to, as the director, concede to you, right, the writer, the one who's got the great idea, and when do you know as a director to step in and say, okay, but you know what? What you want is really ridiculous, and you're not going to make any money. So you need to trust me now that I know what I'm doing. How hard can that be for you in your industry?
That is honestly where it does get a little bit political and the hierarchy comes into play. At the end of the day, the producer is the it's where the buck ends. What they say is what gets accomplished and done. Where the director really comes into play is to making the vision a reality. And it does help when it's both. That's why you see in today, it's very common that, you know, we see a bunch of videos going around of like, you know, like Mark Wahlberg and all that. They direct as well as they produce, because it is easier to be a deliverer as well as a messenger.
Right.
And so, what it comes down to is when you know you're working with a good team is when a producer is hands off. They deliver the vision and they step away. It really falls on the director to technically deliver and be in charge of this camera angle, camera one, camera two. And typically there is a production team, and a production assistant is way more involved than a producer or the actual production itself. And so whenever you see that, and then executive producer, we won't even get into that. Yeah.
Thank you.
It really does fall on the director. Everything, it's the creative vision turned into delivery. It's the action. It's the idea turned into action as the director. It's the operation manager.
So, but then you actually brought up kind of something that is my next question is, I've been trying to make my videos for about 2 years now, and I've been working with a lot of individuals and a lot of companies, and then I get other people on the side going, you know, all you have to do is go to the technology store down the street. You could do it yourself, because the stuff that they have, the actual cameras, the different lighting, the different audio equipment that they have, it's not any better than what you could get buying yourself. And I say, okay, but here's the deal. I don't know how to actually put the camera or how to do the lighting. I do need the judgment of a professional. Okay, so how much does the equipment really matter, and how much does just the knowledge of how to manipulate the equipment that you're using really determine how it's going to turn out?
It really actually, I think it comes down to that's a really good question. great equipment, everything, right? Like you want to have more technically savvy equipment, but that doesn't mean if you're working with a Nikon D500 and it's this old camera where there's a lot, you know, Sony's known for being technically more savvy with their software and whatever. What it really comes down to is when somebody is educated in this space, there is a night and day difference, because the equipment helps make it easier and allows more room for error, but a good director is going to be able to manipulate that. They can take anything raw, and this is how you'll know a good director, because there's room for error, because there's going to be raw footage. And when you take that into post, you can manipulate that process in any which way or form. What matters is that camera is operational, that the ISO, the shutter speed, the exposure, all of that is accurate. So it 100% falls into the hands of the beholder. It's kind of like, you know, yeah, you have in the hierarchy of business, right, there's typically a director of a department, and then there's the manager. The manager is hands-on responsible for kind of the department's success, even though on top of that hierarchy, you have the director who supplies the equipment. You know, so the equipment is important. But you see it in business all the time. You know, you see outdated equipment, but you see very technically savvy people who know what they're doing, who are educated and self-teach and self-taught. And that's really a big component of success in this industry, is kind of having that entrepreneurial spirit, is self-teaching yourself, always seeking knowledge and learning. And so once you – it's taking theory and applying it. It's taking education and turning it into practicality. And that's really the difference. Yes, you can go up the store and get some decent equipment, but you may not know exactly what, you know, ISO you need to have that, what lighting is correct, do you want soft or hard lighting, et cetera. And so that is where you'll see differences, and that's going to show in post. It is in the hands of the reporter.
And the reason that I'm asking you these questions before we open up the lines, I'm going to go ahead and let listeners call in and ask you specific questions if they have any, is because the flat truth, the bottom line here in this day and age, COVID-19 means that everything is going to change. Anything that you may have done in person, it's now going to be online. And in fact, when I tell people, my radio show, I'm like, a podcast. I say, no, this is an actual radio station, and I have a producer, because now everybody does everything on YouTube, right? Okay, so you can go ahead and get your cellular phone, which, oh my God, my cellular phone actually has a better camera than my laptop computer, okay? Then I can go ahead and put on a show. Sorry, my brain's going to Spanish for a second. I can put on a video series into YouTube. And hey, you know what? As long as I got people buying my product, I don't need to actually go to a television station or go to a radio station. People are going to be all of these self-made millionaires. They're going to be movie stars working out of their bedroom with some great lighting and a really good cellular phone. So if we know that COVID-19 is going to be changing the market and production and the existence of everything that is now media, then we're going to go ahead and have an idea of what that's going to involve. And I'm going to ask you some more specific questions, okay?
Absolutely.
Okay, so just to let everyone out there know, if you have a specific question that you want to go ahead and ask Cam, the number is 888-627-6008. And you can go ahead and talk to me, because I'm going to be talking about relationships and business now also. And you can talk to Cam. If you're doing something for yourself and for your business, now is the time to say, look, I just lost my job that I had for 35 years because it literally, quote, does not exist, unquote, anymore, because the industry that I'm in doesn't have that demand. People are not allowed to be with people anymore. How in the hell am I supposed to do this if there's no demand for my service? I don't have anything else to offer. I don't have any other skill. Do I have to go back to school? No, you know what? Offer whatever you were offering from a distance. Or you could do it, you know, from a different venue or in a different approach, a different delivery. Cam, this is one of the things that I really want people to think about, how much they trust the industry itself. There is a lot of corruption out there, and you need to build relationships with people to find the good quality people. How important have you, in your experience, found that to be?
Well, there's a saying that I love. It's cliche, but, you know, it takes 30 years to build a reputation and 3 seconds to destroy it. And
I love you. Thank you.
It's a famous Buffett quote, and that's someone I look up to, a businessman. But the point is, to answer your question, trust is everything, because, you know, here you are selling authentic and very helpful and value-added classes, but there's a lot of people out there. I see it all the time with, like, these Bitcoin and cryptocurrency class scammers. It's a complete hoax, and it's a shame, because dark light on people who are trying to add value to everyday people's lives as we're seeing this shift to personal branding. And so it's a shame, and trust is everything, and your network and developing relationships is the core to is the fundamental core aspect to success, in my opinion, and I'm sure is yours as well.
Right. Well, absolutely. But here's the thing. I am actually, I know you might not believe this because you haven't really seen it to any extreme degree, but I'm an introverted intuitive thinking perceiver. I'm an INTP. Now, what that means, my personality is, I don't know if you've ever seen the show Frasier, but his brother, Niles Crane, is an INTP. I am naturally about as interesting as Niles Crane on Frasier. Okay, so most people do not believe that because I have a lot of character and I have a lot of energy, and socially I can get very, I can be very entertaining, but that was because I literally went to a school in my congregation, a theocratic ministry school, where I learned how to establish eye contact, animate with gestures, to have body language, sense stress, modulation, intonation, inflection. When you're saying something, you have to be interesting enough for people to want to listen to. Well, you know what? There's a lot of charisma out there that people get sucked into because they're drawn to the person, but there's nothing out there really that they're offering. But then there are people who are amazing, but they don't know how to sell themselves. And so when we're looking at the millions of people who are buying and selling things, how important is it to be able just to have a conversation to close the deal? How hard is that for some people, in your experience?
It might be the single, it might be the hardest aspect or component of the process itself. Closing is a rare skill set. And why it's a rare skill set is because it's not so much about what you have to offer. While what you bring to the table is important, it's about filling a need. About having, because without conversation to understand what's missing and where the value needs to be added, you're not going to be able to close. You need to understand, you know, for me to find out what Gabrielle might be missing to help produce her video series, whatever the case may be, I need to have a conversation to establish, okay, what is she looking for? Mm-hmm. What does she feel she, how can I help solve her problem? It's about your problem and my solution.
Okay, but you know what? That demands an ability to, I was going to say converse. Some people say conversate. Okay, that means to dialogue. Now, one of the things, and this is another reason why I love Spanish so much more than English, because their words, their syntax, their actual vocabulary is so superior to English. What I like to tell people is, look, we as human beings, we think at a rate of about 500 words per minute. We speak about 250 to 300. So we're only saying half of what we're thinking. We only hear about 200, and we read maybe 120. We write 30 to 40, depending on the device we're using, okay? The fact is, having the ability to not only know what the other person is thinking, but to respond to it appropriately, it is really tough when all we're doing is using our technology. A lot of people, like, for example, when I have to use public transportation, I often do, because I don't have a driver's license, I have epilepsy. I am a fabulous driver, but simply because I could potentially have a seizure in the middle of the road and kill 25 people in one fell swoop, they're like, no, you need to get on the bus. Well, I love that because I can see 50 people in 5 miles. 20 years ago, I would have smiled at them, but I can't smile at them now because I have to stupid mask, even with my COVID-19 shot, which I is totally against everything I believe in. I'm still looking, and they are scared to death to make eye contact. And then when we make actual conversation, I have to scream because I'm crying. There's a wall between us, and then there's cloth between us. So when I'm thinking 500 words a minute that I want to make a joke and a connection with that person, I've got 5 to 10 seconds to establish that trust with them. How much do the people now saying, well, I've got a really great product and I know how to teach people how to, say, manage money, or I've got some great recipes that I want to put on YouTube. How do I get people to be drawn to me? When you're looking at visual stimulation, I don't know where to even start. How much do people need to be able to say to the people that are going to be recording them, this is what I want, and I want you to tell me how that's going to happen. You need to close your deal for me. I'm not working for you. You're working for me. What advice would you give someone like that?
That's a very good question. So essentially closing, how to seal the deal, if I'm not mistaken, is your question.
Well, yeah, it's for the person who's saying, I don't even know how to talk to the producer. Like you would say, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to make your videos. For them to say, what are the questions that they would need to ask someone like you that they could confidently say, okay, I want this, I want this, I want this, I want this. And if you don't give me what I want, because you're working for me, honey, yeah, I'm giving you the money, but you're working for me. I want to make sure that you're someone I can trust because I want to make sure you do things a certain way. I want to make sure you respect me. I want to make sure you know what you're doing. What are some things that someone who's starting out in an entirely new field, everything video, but I want to make this a good quality production. How do I weed through all the bad people? What would be the, let's just say, four questions that I would ask someone who's trying to get me to sign the contract with them to determine if they are worth what they're asking me for? Can you give me some specific questions that they would ask someone and say, okay, you know what? Yeah, now I know after this 20-minute face-to-face personal conversation, and I not only trust you as a person, but these are some things that I would need to know about your industry to know that, yeah, you are not a scam artist and you're not cheap and you're not unprofessional. How would they be able to determine in a very short period of time what would qualify a producer, a director, as someone worth their money?
I think that ultimately would come down to what we call in the industry a reel, which is essentially an example resume, but that also would probably, you know, that's a fantastic question, weeding out the fake from the reel. And that's really old. That is what it comes down to in every aspect. That's really tough. It takes research. The number one question you could probably ask someone is, what is their mission? What is every business should, every brand, every business, anything you feel a connection to in society is typically because you can relate. And right. Therefore, I think the question to ask someone is, what is their mission? What is their social objectives? While the money and the budget is important, there should be a mission statement that the brand and the business is based around, delivering value, and not only where the value is perceived and interpreted, mm-hmm. but the intent behind it. That would be one of my questions, is what is he or she or they's mission statement, objective? What is their brand based around? What is their value proposition? On top of asking for in the production or directing industry, is what is, show me your reels, or show me your act. If you were doing a casting call, it would be an acting resume with a headshot and examples of assisted productions. You know, when I send in my resume, I have examples of some cut scenes and hyperlapses that I've helped co-produce with Kendall Cooper Casting. I'm fortunate and blessed to know them and have built some connections and them. And so I think ultimately, actually, to highlight what your entire show is all about, it really comes down to who you know. Another great question, the third question I would add to those first two would be, who do you know and why do you do it? And I think that's, they should be able to establish or highlight some references in the industry. And if you're just starting out, you may not have those, but in that case, you should highlight who you intend to try to be like, who inspires you, who you look up to. And I think if someone's trying to be, if someone, you know, Dwayne Johnson's a great example, right? Like someone, he does some producing, directing, acting as well. And so he has a good character. Someone told me, hey, I'm just starting out. My goal is to get to the level of Disney, you know, because there's the big five in media, umbrella, everything underneath them, essentially, give or take. And so what it really comes down to is to break into that industry. If someone's starting out, I would like to build my idea and concept around someone who's done it that I respect, that I trust, mm-hmm. because I believe they know well and provide value in a socially helpful way.
Okay, and so when we're talking about, if I just said, I want you to explain what you're doing to me as you're doing it, or you know what, I just have questions as you're in the process of recording, let's say you did my MBTI videos, well, why would you use this equipment, or why would you use this particular strategy or this angle? How much should a person be interested in sharing their knowledge, their experience, their history, all that good stuff with the person that they're working for, like you in your shoes as a producer, as a director, as the marketing company? How much would I, as your client, have a right to ask you questions about what you do and why you do it, separate from the actual job that you're doing?
It should, and I highlight, be a transparent process. Okay. And good questions are welcome, because knowledge given is knowledge received. It's teamwork. There should be no mystery process.
Right. Okay. And so when we're talking about, let's just say I had, hey, you know what? I've got a really great product, and you know that I have a really great service, and right now I don't have a whole lot of money up front. Let's negotiate, for example, I'll give you a percentage of the profit. How much should a person who's looking for a producer, a production company like yourself, say, no, you know what, you're charging me $1,500. Well, you know what, my husband just got laid off and I've been sick with COVID-19. Okay, so I don't have any money, but I got a great product. How much would a payment arrangement be reasonable for a person like myself to ask of you? And how much should they really say, no, you know what, I want a cut of you, should say to me, I want a cut of what you're going to make, because I know that right now all we need to go is on the internet and you've got 25,000 people buying this right now. It would be better for me to have a percentage of the profits than to have a really high asking rate up front.
Oh, I see. That's fantastic. There's two structures to how that could be structured. There's what's called a subscription service or fee, or as a lot of beginners to the industry call it, kind of a one-time fee, a one-time.
Yes.
Yep, and then there's what's called a royalty structure, and that's actually something I had in place with Kendall Cooper Casting, and typically you're going to offer a very minimal amount of the percentage. You're going to get between 1-3% of the proceeds from that process of a royalty structure, but it's an ongoing structure, and while short term it seems not as gain. The entire process to me consists of either a royalty structure or a one-time fee. I think when you're looking at a royalty structure, it should be between 1-3%. You're looking at, you know, cents to the dollar in terms of immediate profit, but long-term longevity on cash flow. But then when you're looking at a one-time kind of, let me test out this model with this individual to see if their creative delivery methods are adding value, it really should fall around a grand or under. It really shouldn't go above $1,000 for the first time you're going to work with someone. And that's in my professional opinion. Whenever, yes, it really shouldn't. There's, unless you are Kendall Cooper, unless you are someone who's been there, done that, and has that reputation to back that, I don't really see the justification in charging someone an astronomical amount, because you're talking about a relationship and trust again, because if you trust someone, I don't need a huge upfront fee because I know I'm going to get a consistent cash flow input from that, because I'm going to do a good job and deliver a good product that you then can use. It adds value and you then are going to want to come back to me. So why do I need to charge you this giant upfront cost? Because I know you're going to come back, because I know I have a great product.
Thank you. Yes. And you know what? And I'm going to tell you something. Oh my God, he might kill me for saying this, but my son, he goes to this woman who cannot cut hair to save her life. He's not going for the service, honey. He's going for the relationship. And I just keep saying to my husband every time I see my son, I'm like, does he have a mirror? Can he see how bad she is at her job? And he's like, but he loves her. And so it doesn't even matter. And he even gives her a tip. I'm like, you cannot tell me he actually tips her. And he's like, honey, it's about the relationship. You're a relationship coach. You should know that. Okay, yes, fine. I'm just in denial. And that's okay. Because let me tell you something, my son, I got to tell you, Cam, I've got three kids. And I've always told everybody, I do not have a favorite, because they're all three very different people. I've raised them three very different ways. The only moment in time when I actually felt like I had a favorite was my oldest, when I was about 4 years into my company, my business, and he said, yeah, my mom's a shrink. And I said, baby, you gotta stop telling people I'm a shrink. I'm not a shrink. And he turned around, he looked at me, he looked me straight in the face. He said, Mom, you're the worst kind of shrink. You're a shrink in denial. Oh my God. That was a touche
moment. You got your marketing assistant right there.
And the fact is, it's about the relationships. And people come to me. They come to me because they've gone to their shrinks for 10 years and they literally do not get any help. They come to me and say, why am I not fixable? And the first thing I say, because you're not broken, first of all. Okay, you're just a very rare personality type. And you've learned some life behaviors, as soon as you modify the behavior, that, by the way, the person sitting on the other side of that restaurant, if they were displaying the same behavior, would not need help. It's just with your personality, that particular behavior is unhealthy for you. And so when I was coaching people in the beginning, my first client was, I got him in a coffee shop. We were standing there and I was making my little beverage with the condiment bar. And he said, "So what kind of work do you do?" I said, "Oh, hi, nice to meet you. I'm a life coach." And he said, "What is that? I've heard of that." And I thought, oh my gosh, I need to come up with a sales pitch. I said, I help people reach their goals by taking the path of least resistance, embracing their strengths of their personality and their true nature. And he goes, "Ooh, that's good. I like that. How much do you charge?" And I thought, oh my God, how much do I charge? How much? $60 an hour. And he said, "If you can tell me why I am not sick, I am not miserable, I am not broke, I am not ugly, I don't have any dysfunctional family members because I'm Mormon, they're all great people. How you can tell me why I'm not happy, I will absolutely give you $60 an hour." And I said, "Okay, well, this is good then." And when I explained to him, well, you know, the first thing I did, I gave him his personality profile. I said, "You know what? You're the assistant district attorney. You need to quit that job because you're not political. You're an INT." He's now a professor, and he plays a musical instrument for a horrible band, and he's never been happy. When you know who you are and you know how to help people get to be who they are and what they want. He referred me to 250 people. And wow. I've never had to advertise ever, because everybody that I talk to and I say, "You're not sick, you're just weird, and we need to go ahead and tweak a little bit of your weirdness and maximize it," then you're going to have all of these things that were impediments. They're now stepping stones. They were stumbling blocks. Now they're stepping stones. People love it when you say and do and great. Are great things. And so if you have, like yourself, you said, if someone trusts the work that you've done with them for them, it really isn't going to be about the money up front. They will have a relationship with you long term that will be a repeat experience.
Absolutely. The people, I shouldn't say the people. I always get worried when I hear the first words out of someone's mouth is a budget or a price, and it's a fixation of theirs. And because it's like you said, it's really more about the relationship and the opportunity. The money's going to come. And so it's like you said, the first time you were asked, you're like, what do I charge? $50 an hour. And because it's more about adding the value. Going to come. That can come because someone trusts you. You've now developed and built a relationship which is going to serve more value than any one-time fee could ever.
Right. Well, but, and the fact that we're going so extremely into technology. I didn't tell you the computer's gender joke when we were first talking, because I really wanted to hear your reaction to it. It's kind of a long joke.
And my please do.
You what?
I said, please do. I would love to hear.
Okay. My listeners have heard it a couple times. Okay. The Spanish teacher was explaining that in Spanish, words are feminine or masculine, and so you need to put an article, el or la, in front of them. And so one of the students, it was an adult class, a guy, he said, "Well, is it el computador or la computadora?" And she said, "Well, do you think it's more like a man or more like a woman?" And he said, "I'm not answering. That's a loaded question." And she said, "No, you know what? We're going to make it a game. Men over here, women over there, you guys talk it out. And you think if this thing is a guy or a gal, you tell me." And the men were whispering and laughing, and the women were getting irritated. And the guys go, "No, this thing's a chick. There's no question it's a chick." And she said, "Really? Well, why is that?" And they said, "We got four reasons. Number one, only their creator understands their internal logic. Number two, they speak a language that only other computers understand. Number three, they store every mistake you ever make in long-term memory for future retrieval. And finally, probably most important, you spend half your paycheck on accessories for them." And the teacher said, "Oh my God, that's great. Ladies, please save me. I'm drowning here. You got to help me." And they said, no, this thing's a guy. We'll tell you why. We got four reasons too. Number one, they won't do anything for you if you don't turn them on first. Number two, you can give them all the information in the world and they still can't think. Number three, they claim to solve all your problems in life. And you know what? In real life, when it comes down to it, they're the damn problem. And most importantly, number four, if you had just waited 6 months, you could have had a much better one. The bottom line, Cam, computers aren't going anywhere.
They are not. They are not. You should see some of these machine learning algorithms and how they profile us individually. It's absurd. It's insane. And you really get one chance at being in this supervised testing data model. You're right. It's nuts. The technology that we're slowly kind of adapting and initiating and being ushered into, it's crazy. It's so technical.
But when we're talking about the fact that everything that we do in life is about it now, and we have to embrace certain things about just work in general, business in general, every industry, that even the fast food industry is now saturated with technology. People are having to deal with and yet still not become extreme about embracing and incorporating that in their life. My baby girl and I, we always go out to breakfast. Just separate from the men. She's 21 now, but I still call her my baby. And she said to me, it was about a year ago, we were in a restaurant and there was a family of four, a mother, a father, a son, and a daughter. They all had their cellular phones out at the table. And she said, Mother, if you ever pull out your cell phone while I'm talking to you, I said, Mija, I never would. You know I never would. What are you talking about? She almost started crying. It's like someone on one side of the house is texting someone on the other side of the house because they don't want to get up and walk. No, it's because they actually don't want to make eye contact because they don't really like the person in that family. How much is our social, just our world, our physical world, changing the way that we relate to each other in business? And how much are people going to have to just know how to do everything in business on a computer?
Oh, gosh, you hit on something very deep and very true. It's a little bit unfair. It's a little bit unfair, but we are reaching an unprecedented time of digital application in society today. It's kind of like most people would rather send a text message than even have a face-to-face, you know, FaceTime phone call, let alone an interaction in actuality, like you just described. I mean, it's tough, and we're seeing this transition from personalities to products. You know, we're now entering an era where we're more of the product than we are more of the individual. It's crazy.
So when we have something like our cellular phone, we have our laptop, we have our desktop. When I was in this what is it? I was recently in this. Hold on, let me. I'm looking for Air Meet. Here we go. Air Meet. Some things happened yesterday. I was trying to give a presentation to a group of women. Air Meet, which I'd never heard of, was the platform of an esteemed colleague of mine that she was using this. And she said she invited me to share some great information about MBTI functional order with the women who would be attending the presentations. Camp, four times I was either cut off completely or experiencing technical difficulties, including freezing. And after 2 hours, not only was I still unable to finish my presentation, but I had to go. They have these breakout rooms. They're like tables, okay, that you actually have to have individual separate discussions in smaller groups. I couldn't even get that to work because of this stupid technology. And I'm thinking, okay, you know what? It's been an hour and a half. This thing was supposed to be shut down, but the poor lady who was hosting this thing could not get it to work right. Well, apparently it was a weather issue. Oh my God. She just afterwards, she said, I am so sorry. You're going to have to come on my YouTube show so I can interview you there. And I'm like, okay, we can do this. What would happen if our technology was completely eliminated? Let's just say, to be crazy, for 48 hours, every phone, every computer, every website, every television, we'll just even say television, was completely gone. And we had to go back to William Wallace, Braveheart, okay, times. So none of that stuff was even conceived yet. And we had to be with each other and look at each other. And you know what? I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow on my show. I don't know what time this other thing is going to start. And I don't know how to get to that particular place with my little device. I have to walk to that place by taking the different streets that are in front of my face. How many people would have some kind of mild anxiety attack that they would need to medicate because we don't feel safe without our technology?
Wow. The irony in what you just brought up is so prevalent and frankly, ironic. It's we're being asked to place our trust in something that we have no example or proof of to trust. It's funny. And to touch on what you just mentioned, yeah, we'd be in a world of chaos because we're so dependent upon this technology for interaction today, even us right now. What would we do? It kind of reminds me of that colonial pipeline IT attack, right? There was luckily they didn't get to the operational controls, the OCs, but they infiltrated the IT and the security, and gas was not available to the East Coast for a few days, and people were going haywire. And yeah, that all depended on logical aspects of the IT infrastructure and the security of it. And we had a prime example of what happened when technology isn't up to date or something goes wrong. We saw total mm-hmm. chaos. People were building like swimming pools up of gas and driving it home.
Right. Okay. So let's just go back to something very basic because my producer hasn't said anyone's calling in. I think you and I are going back and forth here pretty good. And I've been asking some good questions to keep people, thinking about these things. Now, one of the things that I've always said is, look, the reason why I do not ever get the flu shot, I do not take Tylenol when I have a headache, I do not apply any kind of ointment to my skin is because I genuinely believe that my body is capable of doing everything that it needs to do because I am in a high quality state of spirit. That's because I do things like I touch people. I'm Italian, so I shake hands and I hug and I kiss. And I have a lot of that positive social energy that when I am looking at people, I make eye contact and I smile at them. How important is our relationship with our self to be able to say, I am healthy, I am happy, I like who I am. So when I go up to a person, I'm not suspicious of them. I'm not defensive. I'm not scared. I'm not insecure. I actually feel like I don't know them and I don't know what's going on, but I'm going to give them something that they didn't have before they came up to me, and they're going to be a higher quality soul because they have had an interaction with me. You know what? I actually got the COVID-19 shot, even though I hate everything about everything pharmaceutical, because let me get up on my soapbox. I think the pharmaceutical industry is heinously evil, and I think it's the source of a large part of the evil in our world. And I think the medical industry is a paradox. You cannot be an industry and be helpful because the corruption of that, the greed of that, is going to undermine any help that you can give people because your motivation is ultimately selfish. I still got the COVID-19 shot because I think that when I take off my mask and I giggle and my eyes look really beautiful, that the person in front of me is going to laugh too. And they're going to walk away from me going, wow, I feel healthier because I have dopamine, I have endorphins, I have serotonin. That is going to stop me from getting the flu that the COVID-19 shot is going, or that the COVID-19 virus is going to exacerbate and kill me. You know what? If we're happy and we're relaxed and we're healthy and we're peaceful, we're not going to get sick. How much do we need to establish those relationships with people in general in order to then do well in business and do well with the work that we're doing in the world, in a society of technology that's undermining everything about relationships?
It's funny because it, that highlights that highlights another aspect of life, because it's all dependent on relationship. You're highlighting the most important one being the one with yourself, right? Like, how are you, the divorce rate's the highest it's ever been in history today. Because why? A lot of people are unhappy and unhappy with themselves. And therefore, how are you going to be happy with someone else? How are you going to build relationships when you don't know how to build one with yourself or have one with yourself, or at least a positive one? And so, you know, it's really difficult because it's a process. And that's why in business, a lot of mentors I've had in the past, a lot of important relationships I've developed, the number one thing they highlight is believing in yourself and identifying the happiness within yourself. Because how are you going to be successful and lead others when you don't even think that you're capable of doing so? How are you going to add value to someone else's life? How are you going to sell a product or service? How are you going to build a relationship? You don't even have one with yourself.
Exactly.
It's crazy.
Well, and you are going to start to say something else. I just got really excited when you said that, because having a relationship with yourself, but that's such a foreign concept, even conceptually, that may seem counterintuitive to relating to other people. I always tell people, like my dance teacher said, you need to be centered. If you're going to dance, if you're going to spin around on your toes, you have to have balance. No, you need to have center. Balance is everything around you, outside of you. Center is the core of your own strength and energy and weight. You have to know where your center is. But like when I said, I really do like to have people feel the good feeling that I have. You have to have that good feeling first. And when you're doing business, having that ability to draw good people to you, because I promise you, a lot of the people who are very sick and very toxic in the world, they feel me coming around and they are repelled actually by my good energy, because I look at them and I'm like, you're totally gross, right? And they run the other way. So having that, that's vital to doing good business in the world, but also having the relationships and doing the things that you want in life. It's going to require technology, but you have to know how to communicate personally with the person that's going to produce your videos. And you need to know how to have a phone call, not just an email message, with the person that you're hoping to sign for a partnership, maybe in a production of something. What I'd like to do is have some information about what you do. What I like to do also is tell my listeners that people do a specific, provide a product or a service. Would you be willing to offer something, maybe a discount or a promotional offer, to look into the work that you do as a producer, even in marketing, if they did want to do something with video, if they had questions that they wanted to ask you? A lot of listeners are archive, you know, listeners. They say, well, God, I really want to know what you do more about it, or what would you be willing to offer me as a first-time video, you know, maker? What would you have something that you could offer them?
You know, Gabrielle, for your list, I would love to offer a free consultation initially, and then from then establish. I would like to direct people, because I think it's very important to get into the practice, into the habit. As much as we want to repel and reject, it's important to start getting familiar with the platforms that actually how we kind of established ourselves in our relationship. I would direct people to my social media, Cam Harden Media. You can find me on Instagram with that same name, my LinkedIn, my Facebook. And it's vital. From there, you can email. I actually even have my phone number linked to my socials, because I want people to reach out more so than just providing a service line. I get FAQs, I get questions all the time from people just asking me, hey, what camera should I use? I'm looking to getting into producing or even just, you know, building a YouTube channel. And they'll say, hey, Cam, I have a question. Do I want Nikon, Sony, this, that, the other? And I'm happy to open a dialogue and communicate with them and let them know what's worked for me, what's worked for others, the people I know, the people in the industry, and what to try to avoid based on experience and on statistical data.
I'm sorry. Tell me again how to exactly spell the website, and then your email address, and then tell me your phone number as well, so they can have all of that.
Absolutely, it's going to be Cam C-A-M, Hardin, H-A-R-D-I-N, and then media. That's going to be the link, the handle for all of my socials. My website is going to be Cam Hardin Media, spelled the same way, .com. We're in a rebrand phase, so you're about to see a much more interactive interface here shortly. It's going to be delivered in the next week. But the point is, and then my phone number is 804-310-4587. And I, by all means, please, if anyone has questions, I've been in this industry for a while. I'm blessed to have some of the connections I do. Even if we don't work together, please, by all means, ask me or Gabrielle a question. And I'm happy to answer it, because I believe we're shifting into an era of personal branding, and it will come down to your technological capabilities as well as it will your knowledge and your comfortability with the products you're using.
There
and
you
so
go.
If you have any questions, by any means, please reach out. I'm happy to answer, you know, whether it be from the software I use to the editing formats I use to the rendering process, doesn't matter.
Okay.
Please shoot me a text. 4310-4587, or my email is CameronJamesHardin15@gmail.com. I'm happy to answer any and all questions.
All right. Thank you so much, Cameron. I'd really love having you here. And again, if you have any questions, this is BBS Radio. My name is Gabrielle Cardona. Thank you so much for joining us in yours, mine, and ours.